Uka chaka, uka, uka, uka chaka, uka, uka, uka chaka, uka.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Prochko and Angie Han.
Hey there.
Hello.
This week we're going to switch things up a little bit. We're going to start off by talking about our winners and losers of the summer season. And then when we're done blowing through some topics on that, we're going to touch on our most anticipated movies of the fall or the rest of the year, really. So we are going to start off with Angie talking a little bit about what Marvel offered up this summer.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that this is, like, surprising or, like, a, you know, surprising development at all, but one of the big winners this summer was Marvel. Like, they already had one of the biggest films of the year earlier this spring in Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and then, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is now the biggest movie of the year and definitely the biggest movie of the summer, I think. Well, I'm sure about the summer part, I'm not sure about the year part.
It's not going to be.
Right now,
I think it is the highest grossing.
It is.
Right now, it is. I don't think that it's. I don't necessarily think it's going to keep up because, yeah, as you pointed out, Mockingjay is coming in. But, you know, it's a studio that continues to seemingly do no wrong, which, I mean, they've had a few things, but, like, let's think about, like, Chris Pratt is the next Jennifer Lawrence, and they were the first ones to, like, really scoop him up before, like, you know, Jurassic Park cast him, and now it seems like he's the guy that's, like, up for everything, and they were the ones that seemed to figure out before everyone else what kind of
potential. And he's also dominating the web. Like, him and Dancing Groot are just huge. They're everywhere.
That's what I mean when he's in Jennifer Lawrence. Like, he's not just like, oh, it's another, like, pretty person that, like, Marvel has put in one of their movies. It's like, he is everywhere. Everyone seems to, like, love him. Naturally, that means there are a few haters, but, you know, for the most part, he seems immensely popular.
Well, it's also because he's doing everything from just doing goofy stuff, like his goofy take on the Ice Bucket Challenge, to doing things like when he went to that hot children's hospital and, like, played with them, like, dressed as Star-Lord, you know, I mean...
Yeah, he seems incredibly likable. And then, as you pointed out, Dancing Groot is, like, one of the other breakout stars of the summer.
I want, like, that Dancing Groot Funko Pop toy so badly, I can't even get to tell you. And I'm so nervous that it's going to come out, and then it's going to get sold out, and I won't get it.
I'm holding out for, like, I'm hoping that eventually they'll release something that's closer to what's in the movie, and I'm holding out for that, but this is the first time that I walked out of the movie being like, I need to buy some merchandise. And, of course, it was the one fucking time they didn't have anything ready to go. So, you know.
That is the one Marvel fail this year, is they did not anticipate how much people were going to want a Dancing Groot as soon as they left the theater.
Exactly.
Guys, Disney owns you. How did you not think of that?
I don't know.
I still want one of those Dancing Groots where, you know, it's like one of the little solar-powered thing that sits by your
window.
That's what I want more than anything.
And then, of course, well, you know, so Marvel is not only, you know, not only are they doing all this great stuff, they're leaving all their competitors in the dust. Like, you know, X-Men did fine. Amazing Spider-Man did, like, a little less than fine. DC, meanwhile, is floundering, and every time they announce something that's supposed to, like, drum up more publicity and make it seem more exciting, it just makes them look more desperate.
Everyone's just like, you're too ambitious. You should stop doing that.
It's not even ambition. It reads more like desperation. Like, when you know, back in, like, the mid-2000s when Marvel was like, we're going to have this, like, crazy franchise that spans a bunch of other franchises, it's all going to build up to the Avengers. That sounded ambitious. When DC has, like, every time DC's like, oh, we have, like, 9 things planned, but we're not going
to
tell you.
I guess that's bound to happen when you're coming after Marvel and it comes across like you're copying them.
Well, it makes sense that they want to do that, and they have the comic book characters to get that going, but they don't have the success rate that Marvel has. And I mean, yeah, Man of Steel made tons of money, and obviously the Dark Knight trilogy is huge, but they're not bringing in the Dark Knight trilogy, and Man of Steel was totally polarizing among fans, so they don't have the same kind of, like, fan dedication. Like, people that are seeing DC movies are seeing them because they love the characters, not because necessarily they love DC movies.
Yeah,
I think DC on TV, though, is doing almost the exact opposite. Like, they've got the right approach to it there. They're not doing it on screen, though, at all.
No, DC, you're right. DC TV shows seem to be doing, you know, pretty well. But, I think that watching DC try to replicate Marvel's success just kind of reinforces how difficult it is to pull off what Marvel has pulled off. Because sometimes they make it look easy. You're just like, well, naturally, obviously, Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be good. Like, look at this cast and stuff. But, like, then you see, like, DC try to pull it off, and you're just like, oh, right, it's not as easy as it looks.
Aw, poor DC.
Yeah, but we should.
DC's not exactly a loser, but there was a much bigger loser.
No,
summer.
I know we're crying for billionaires, but
pretty much.
Yeah. But so yes, winner Marvel. But we should move on to the next topic.
All right, and I have to introduce a loser, and this is so disappointing because this is my favorite genre ever, and we're just like not getting anything good at all. Horror is a loser of the summer. I'm just going to talk about it quality-wise first. I mean, you know, the Purge Anarchy was okay. It's a fun action film. I love watching Frank Grillo. I enjoyed watching it, but really, was it that good? Did it finally use that brilliant concept for what it's worth? No, not really.
I would say more that it's not even... It's more of a thriller than, like, a horror, I guess.
Yeah, it's more like Escape from New York or something. It was fun, and Angie and I had a blast watching it, I remember. And we got yelled at by some other critics for liking it as much as we did. Whatever. I have no shame about it. It was fun. But, like, yeah, it didn't... The other thing is that it didn't capture the imagination of people the way, like, horror movies did last summer. We had no Conjuring this summer.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that we're halfway through the year at this point, and... I don't feel as strongly about anything than I did with The Conjuring. Like, by the time we hit the end of summer last year, I knew The Conjuring was going to be in my top 10. And, I was writing my fall horror preview for Collider the other day, and my intro was all about how, you know, the year's kind of weak. I'm not that excited about anything. And if I'm being honest, the only movies that I would probably rewatch at this point are Afflicted, Stage Fright, and I'm forgetting one.
Cheap Thrills?
Oh, you know, actually, I forget that Cheap Thrills kind of counts as this year. I saw it last year at South By. I saw it a couple times in 2013, so it's so ingrained in 2013 in my mind. But no, there was one more. Oh, Oculus. I would watch Oculus again, too. But that's really it, and I like all of those movies a lot, but none of them are, like, mind-blowing like The Conjuring. Yeah. But... on the bright side, we do have a really good 2 months of horror coming up. Well, possibly good.
Let's talk about what actually came out this summer. Because, like, what's funny is when we talked about, like, horror being a loser, I was like, yeah, because there was only The Purge Anarchy. And then, no, there were, like, four other movies. I just couldn't remember them at all.
Right. Oh, remember The Quiet Ones? That was the one that right up until this very moment I forgot existed.
That was, like, April, I think.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was April.
Oh, that was back.
And there was, so there was The Sacrament, which I didn't even see. Perry, you said that one was that's the only one that got critical praise of the ones that came out this summer.
I found it very off-putting. I mean, it is what it is, and I think it's good for what it is, but it's not the kind of movie that I enjoy. Like, you can't walk away from that movie being like, oh, that was entertaining and fun. I mean, I guess that's not the point of all horror movies is to be fun.
No, they should be fun.
Yeah, this one
and then there was, like,
is a little different.
There was Deliver Us from Evil, which Perry and I saw together. Yeah, it was like a neat concept that just
you can't give a movie like Sinister and then follow it up with that and then expect people to be excited about it.
Yeah, and I think the creepiest part of Deliver Us from Evil for me was that I was eating pizza during it, and it was movie theater pizza, and it felt like sponges that were moist and hot. So, like, when that's the scariest thing about your cinema experience, there's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, there was some, you know, so there, I guess it wasn't a complete bust, it sounds like, but there was definitely nothing this year that, like, everyone saw and was talking about like there was with The Conjuring, or even, like, the first The Purge. Like, people didn't like it that much, but it was still a movie that, like, it seemed like people were all talking about this summer.
It kind of came and went.
Yeah, and then
I think I'm talking more about The Purge Breakout than I am the actual movie. Because that was cool, innovative, and exciting.
It's too bad they can't get that on screen just yet. But, I mean, The Purge made huge amounts of money, we should say. The Purge made $71 million domestic and $105 million worldwide, and it only cost $7 million. So we're going to get another Purge movie, and I think that's cool. And I want to see more of the Michael Kenneth Williams character, who's, like, the revolutionary. Like,
I want to see more Frank Grillo. Oh, my God, that guy. So,
but I don't believe they announced The Purge 3, but, like, if those are the numbers right now, it seems like a no-brainer.
They'd be dumb not to. And, like, you know, and then the other one we talked about this summer was As Above, So Below, which, as you know from, I think it was just last week, we were not fans.
No. What a wasted premise. It was so cool, the setting was so cool, and then the execution was just, it's like, all over the place, just a big mess, no rules, no organization, and a really freaking annoying lead actress.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't want to bash the actress, a really annoying lead character. That's probably a more appropriate way to describe it.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But we should move on to something more optimistic. So, you know, we talked about how Marvel continues to kick ass and how horror movies did not so much this year. You know, this summer, though, I thought there were some really great indies that came out. It wasn't necessarily a great summer for me blockbuster-wise, but, like, Boyhood came out this year, which, first of all, it's a movie we've been waiting for 12 fucking years, so, you know, expectations were high, and I know you guys haven't seen it yet, but in my opinion, it more than lived up to it. It's one of the best movies I've seen in years, probably. So that was a really big win this summer. There was also, I guess, Chef did really well. I'm sorry, I still haven't seen it, but I know that was
Chef is fantastic. Chef's still in my top 10 of the year.
And Chef actually reopened so that it can get Oscar attention.
Yeah, it's doing so,
that's
so
pretty
well
noteworthy.
It's continuing.
I don't know how likely that is. But
I think it can get screenwriting or something. There's a lot of charm in that movie. I don't think it'll get, like, acting awards. But I love it
to death, but I think that might be a stretch.
There was Obvious Child, which is a movie that, like, got a lot of people talking. There was Snowpiercer, which, like, despite all the drama with, like, the director and, like, the Weinsteins about, like, what edition they were going to put out and how they were going to put it out, eventually it came out on VOD, and it actually, and from what they're claiming, it did really well on VOD. They're not releasing numbers, I don't think, so I don't...
Actually, Radius is going to release numbers. I don't know if they have already, but that's their whole new model, which is another thing that makes Snowpiercer so interesting, is Radius, which is a branch of Time Warner. Aha! TWC, the other one, the Weinstein Company. Their thing is that they believe in VOD, and, you know, it's like Frank came out in theaters a couple weeks ago, and now Frank is out on VOD. It's a different model for indies, and it's actually seems to be one that could potentially be really exciting and work, because there are these tiny movies like Snowpiercer that maybe only open in New York and LA, and then people everywhere else are like, well, I'd love to see it, but I'm not going to be able to, and after a couple of weeks,
like,
in those
Frank,
cities,
like,
VOD.
Frank isn't necessarily the kind of movie that I think would, like, get tons of buzz, even though it was Michael Fassbender in it, but, you know, when it's on VOD, maybe people are willing to give it more of a shot. That was another movie that I absolutely adored this summer, another indie that I adored this summer. Belle is another example of a movie that's been doing really well. Christy, I know that you saw it and you loved it. Apparently it's doing well. It did really great with critics, and apparently it's also doing pretty well at the box office. And what's interesting about that movie, it's a movie. It doesn't sound like anything we've seen. It doesn't sound like anything that should be, you know, that sounds like it makes Hollywood sense, because it's a period drama about a black woman, and not like a slave, because that's usually what, you know, African characters are relegated to. But Chrissy, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about that one, right? Because I know you.
Yeah,
loved it.
Belle was actually really amazing, and it's interesting because, like, I described it in my review, saying basically, like, if you love Jane Austen movies, you're gonna love Belle. And what's cool about it is that Belle's based on a true story about this woman. I think her name was Elizabeth Dido. I'm forgetting her last name right now. It's terrible. But she, her father was a white aristocrat. Her mother was a black slave. And her father believes she should be raised as the lady that she was born to be. But, you know, him believing that and the rest of English society believing that were two very different things. And the movie tackles this in a way that is honest, but without being completely soul-crushing. So I loved watching this, and it's on VOD now, and I highly recommend watching it. It's just, it's like, if you like romance movies, it's beautiful, and everything about it is just incredible. The idea that it's an independent movie feels insane. But that's what was so great about the summer. We had independent movies that were all across the board, both budget-wise, style-wise, and everything else.
Yeah, like,
and a lot of them did great.
Couldn't be more different, but they both did really well. So, you know, I feel like even if there weren't always great things to watch, like big studio blockbusters to watch in theaters, if you were like, you know what, I'm going to stay home and, like, watch an indie on iTunes, or, like, you know, I'm just going to, like, try out the small theater near my house and, like, see what kind of art house movies they had, it was a great fucking summer for that.
Yeah. And our last topic for summer wrap-up is tricky, because it's a winner and a loser, which is basically female protagonists. So... bear with me, because this is complicated, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get through this together. So it was a really great summer for female protagonists, because female-led movies, including Maleficent, The Fault in Our Stars, Tammy, and actually Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Although it's not really sold that way.
Yeah, but they are female-led movies, and they all did... Oh, and Lucy. Lucy
That's
did huge.
That's what I just said. Yeah, Lucy did really well. There was one where all the headlines were like, Lucy kicked Hercules' ass, even though one
which is true.
Of them,
yeah, I mean, like, and that had The Rock. Like, we need to consider that, like, The Rock last year was, like, the highest grossing celebrity out there because his movies made more altogether than anybody else. And now this year, he got tanked by Lucy. So, seriously, Marvel, Black Widow movie. I'm just going to leave it at
that. You know, I bet you that partially came from Comic-Con, though. I feel like everybody who would go see that, their attention might have been elsewhere.
You mean Hercules?
Yeah.
I don't think so, man.
I don't know. I think all the Comic-Con stuff kind of, like, stole some of its thunder.
No, first of all, they tried really hard to promote it at Comic-Con. They had, like, screenings and stuff. Nobody...
And he showed up.
People were that interested in it.
Oh, really? I wasn't even aware that he was there.
No, he was there, and he gave away free screenings and, like, presents and stuff. Like,
and it got, like... And think about how little buzz it got compared to, like, you know, in the past when, like, The World's End opened or, like, Scott Pilgrim opened. Like, those were the things that, like, you know, they had screenings at Comic-Con. People were talking all about it, like, Drive. But, yeah, that one... And, like, you know, Comic-Con is big, but we're not talking millions and millions of people. There's, like, you know, it's a few thousand people, like.
Yeah, and what's cool about this is that a couple of years ago when Bridesmaids opened, there was all these discussions about, like, well, can women open a movie? Do people want to see movies with women? And it was, like, a real actual conversation that was being had, and I feel like we need to put that conversation to bed because, like, since then we've had The Hunger Games, we've had The Heat, and this year alone we've had a shit ton of movies that have, like, Maleficent is Angelina Jolie's most successful film ever, and while we were not exactly fans, that's still cool in, like, a socio-political area. And, like, those movies beat Tom Cruise, which is, like, you know, that's huge. Like,
he's another one that's losing some steam too. He's not a sure thing at all.
Edge of Tomorrow is great, but to Edge of Tomorrow's credit, it wasn't just a really fun movie. It was also a really fun movie that had a really cool heroine in Emily Blunt. But the downside to all this is that one of the biggest movies of the summer was Guardians of the Galaxy, and while you had Nebula and Gamora, and they're kind of just pushed to the side, even though their drama, in my opinion, was really interesting, because you had this rivalry, and there was this whole interesting thing going on, but instead they, like, focused on Star-Lord, and they focused on Rocket, and the female characters really
kind of... But that's not even true. They did focus on Gamora and Nebula's rivalry quite a bit. They reference it a lot. It's just they never do much more than just reference it,
exactly.
Say what it is, and show them be like, oh, I don't like you, and then that's it. There was no
Which
layers
is true,
to it at
because
all.
Because that's such a rich, dramatic zone, and they choose not to focus on it. And, like, when you read about how this film came together, Nebula wasn't in the earliest drafts, and... you know, that's an interesting thing where,
that,
like...
That makes a lot of sense.
She feels
I
like...
I was not
in.
Aware of that. Yeah, she feels totally wedged in. Wow.
Yeah, all and right. I mean, I'm hoping that in the second one, we'll actually see more of Nebula and Gamora.
Oh, because I thought they're dynamic. Up for that.
Yeah, the dynamic's interesting. And the other one negative that I have to say, April O'Neil is a negative this summer. Because April O'Neil was the shit in the 90s.
The worst part about April O'Neil in that movie is that she took away from the Ninja Turtles. How can you have a movie called Ninja Turtles and then make the whole damn thing about April O'Neil's desperation to climb the corporate ladder in the...
Yeah, because, like, Megan Fox's April O'Neil has no emotions, and her turtles are her pets, and she's terrible at her job. There's nothing about her that makes me want to be that April O'Neil, and as someone who grew up thinking April O'Neil was cool with her bad hair and jumpsuit and the whole shebang, I would take tacky looking April O'Neil, who is cool and kick ass and fearless, over, you know, gross April O'Neil, who, like, looks great but is constantly getting hit on by skeezy men in turtles. Like, I don't want
to. I did like her jacket, though.
I did like her jacket.
I would wear her jacket.
Yes, but between the trade off, I'll take the crappy jumpsuit if that means I get to hang out with the old April O'Neil.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. All right, so are we going to move on from winners
to
losers?
Yeah, I think we did a pretty thorough roundup of summer. Basically, there was some good and there was some bad, but, like, it's kind of cool how all of that was spread around, guys. We had big movies that were good, we had big movies that kind of were terrible. We had
little love for, like, all different size movies and all different genres. Look
Except
at us.
For more.
Way to go, summer. way to wrap that up.
All right, so now we're going to roll into fall 2014, and I'm going to kick this off talking about my most anticipated movie of the coming months, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1. I'm so excited. You know what I love about the Hunger Games franchise more than anything is that it makes so much freaking money, gets all this attention, Lionsgate goes nuts promoting this thing, and then the movies come out, and they're really freaking good. It deserves every ounce of attention it gets. It deserves every single dollar it makes. And have you guys seen the teaser trailer for Mockingjay? I mean, if that is not a good sign, I don't know what is, because that teaser trailer is incredible.
What I like about it
is amazing.
Yeah,
like, all the marketing for it, like from the, like the promos to like the, you know.
And that's been since day one, you know. Lionsgate has never faltered at all. I have never seen a bad piece of promotional material for a Hunger Games movie in all these years.
They have all these marketing materials that, like, you know, you don't at first glance you're like not even sure how it relates to the movie, but then it just kind of adds to like this feeling of like this is a whole world we're coming into and not just like, you know,
it's because they take the approach of selling the movie but at the same time making you feel part of the movie. It's like those President's Note teasers in the beginning.
It's a really clever way of expanding the world, and like from the way they've been doing the fan experiences to the way they make the Capitol a real thing through CapitolCouture.com and like all those promo posters of characters who aren't in the movie but exist in the world. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is just, it's just like gravy. It's just
Seen that new app that they make? I forget what it, I think it's like Our Leader, the Mockingjay or something. It's basically an app that lets you take your phone and like shine it on like aim it at a wall or something and then put either the Mockingjay symbol, like spray paint style, or a District 13 logo on it. So like people have been posting pictures of like famous monuments with the Mockingjay on it. And someone did a great picture a couple weeks ago of, you know, some, I think it was Caesar's Palace in Vegas, and it just looks so real with like a spray painted Mockingjay dripping down the building. That's such a smart idea, and like this cast is going to be incredible.
Yeah,
look at who this movie has in it. I mean, Julianne Moore is going to have a bigger role than she did in the book. We're still going to get to see Philip Seymour Hoffman. I mean, this cast is growing and growing, and all those new characters, I'm really excited to see Natalie Dormer in that role, and also all the people that are part of her team in that movie, too. I'm thrilled about that.
And I'm also interested to see how they're going to change it from the book, because for people who haven't read the third book, the third book's kind of crappy, frankly.
It feels
so rushed because so much of that book is like Katniss gets knocked out and things happen. There's no way they're going to allow that to happen.
Crappy and rushed are two different things. I don't think it's a bad book by any means. It's rushed and there's too much that they tried to squeeze into that book, which is why I think that the double movie format is going to suit it well. It's going to be a lot better this way.
I think we'll see the things that Katniss has just told in the book, which is what I'm really looking forward to.
I'm really curious where the divide is going to come, though. Because, if I'm picturing what happens in the book and they split it, let's say, down the middle, you know, you're going to have one really action-heavy component and then one that's a lot of moping around. So
we know that things are different because we've seen Effie, where Effie just vanished.
Effie's not in the third book.
But, like, people like Effie, so they brought her back.
Smart move. They should bring back Effie.
Exactly. And I feel like we'll still see Caesar, which is a really smart idea because Caesar Flickerman for the win, guys.
Yeah, they're making smart moves with him, beefing up his role a bit. I'm thrilled. I love Stanley Tucci in anything.
Speaking of movies that look like they're going to be totally bonkers fun, my most anticipated movie of the fall is Birdman. And it's Michael Keaton, and it's from the director of Babel. And in a weird move, he made this dark comedy that appears to be about fame in Hollywood because it's super meta, because Michael Keaton is playing a man named Regan Thompson, who in the 80s played a superhero named Birdman. Not Batman, guys, Birdman. And like now he's kind of struggling to stay relevant. He's trying to do a Broadway play and everything's kind of falling apart. And like in the trailers you see that like the alter ego of Birdman like speaks to him and gives him advice. And it just looks so weird. And like I am probably one of the biggest Michael Keaton fans, just bar none. So that in and of itself is exciting. But they've also got Emma Stone and Edward Norton. And like this movie is getting crazy buzz because apparently it's also shot as if it is one continuous scene, just one long take. And obviously it's not actually shot that way. But that's
technically a couple of cuts, but they're hidden so that when you're watching it, it feels like you're watching one,
which is huge, and it's been tearing it up on the festivals. It's coming to New York Film Festival.
Cannot come soon enough. When is our screening? October. Oh my God.
I know.
Actually, that scares me because now I'm gonna look at it because I'm absolutely panicked about this. That the good ones are all gonna overlap with New York Comic Con, and I'm gonna cry.
It is actually.
I think it does.
It absolutely does.
But here's the thing: Saturday, October 11th.
Yep. Here's the thing. It's okay, though, because if you don't make the New York Film Festival or the New York Festival screenings, as may happen to some of us, it's opening October 17th, so
yeah,
it's
but
coming
that's a whole
really
week
soon.
Later.
Yeah,
so I'm going to miss
guys
that
can tell,
too.
We're all very excited.
I'm so distraught, I'm losing my hair.
No, I think it looks incredible. I think it's also just, like, the timing is kind of funny because we're at, like, basically superhero saturation right now. So then this, it kind of feels like, oh, here's another superhero movie, only it's doing something completely fucking different with the idea of superhero.
It's like superhero Baroque. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so it's like, I feel like it'll be like a fun way to like end a long year of superhero movie, superhero movie, superhero movie, superhero movie. Here's
and
something
also,
a little different.
The trailer shows Michael Keaton like running around in his underwear in a very unflattering
and
kind of
Edward Norton.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It looks like it is a movie where people give zero fucks, and I'm so excited to see that. And I like when celebrities are just like, I'm not going to worry about looking glamorous. I'm going to look like a crazy person, and it's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited about it.
I think it's also the director's first comedy, so that should be interesting to see, like, because, you know.
Yeah. If this doesn't make my top 10, I will be shocked.
Well, based on what I'm hearing out of, where did it just screen? Was it Telluride?
I think it was Venice.
Or maybe it was one of the two, but like every single thing that's come out of there is kind of holy shit.
Yeah, people are losing their minds about it. I'm so excited to see it.
And for me, moving on, for me, the one I am, well, the ones that you guys named are also movies I'm super looking forward to, but the one I'm going to talk about is Box Trolls, the latest film by Laika. You know, they're the ones that did Coraline and Paranorman, and if you saw those, you probably loved them, because how could you not? Those movies are so freaking lovable, and the Box Trolls looks like it's another one in the same vein. It's got, like, a big voice cast full of, like, lots of people that you would recognize. Like, the main character is played by Bran from Game of Thrones. There's, like, Elle Fanning, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, like, just a bunch of people. And if you've seen any of the trailers, it just looks really... Like,
I was going to say, none of those famous people even matter. It's freaking Box Trolls. It's, like, little monsters that wear boxes. Done. Like, I don't need anything else.
The monsters wear little boxes, and it's, like, it's one of those stories about, like, oh, you know, the Box Trolls live, I guess, under, like, in the sewers or something, and then there's, like, a little boy that was raised as one of them, and then eventually he realizes that he's a person, and he has to, like, bridge the gap between Box Trolls and humans, and it's, like, it seems like another, like, really cute story. I don't know, what I've loved about Laika is that they make movies that feel like they're really all ages. They make movies that are, you know, that are targeted at kids, but doesn't talk down to them, so that, you know, even when you watch it as an adult, it doesn't feel overly sugar-coated, it doesn't feel, like, overly, like, you know, dumbed down, it feels really rich, and their animation work is just incredible. Like, any of their movies that you've seen, it's just so rich in detail.
Have you guys gotten around to watching that one trailer that I always talk about?
Which one?
The one where it's they start out and you see the animators' hands moving the figures and how they make the movie, and then it transitions into the footage. Because something like that really just blows
my
mind.
That's what's cool about Lake is they don't just sell the movie, they sell the craftsmanship of the movie. They did that with Paranorman, too. Like, one of the things of that was, like, starting with the wire mold and building out what makes up Paranorman and then seeing him move. And, like, that's the thing. It's almost like artisan filmmaking or something. It's like... Because they share that part of it with you, you feel like you're a part of the process somehow. And it's just incredible looking. I'm really excited about that one.
That kind of marketing really goes a long way towards selling, like, the love and care that go into it. Because, you know, watching something that's stop motion animated is not more difficult for the viewer than watching something that was just, you know, done on CG. But then when you watch the way that it's, like, handcrafted, like, it makes you appreciate how this movie was made.
Between Dancing Groot and Box Trolls, I will be broke by the end of the year. I promise you. There's no way I'm not going to buy a Box Troll. I want to dress Dewey up as a Box Troll for Halloween, because he always sits in boxes, so, like, I have to be able to find a little box that I could put on him, right?
Paint a little fish on it.
Or is that mean?
I don't know. People dress their pets up with all kinds of
crap. I'll do it for a little bit just so I can take a picture and put it on Instagram, and then I'll take it off. Dewey's a Box Troll for Halloween. It's done.
Locked in.
I mean, on that note, you know,
both
ups and downs. We're only looking forward to things in the fall, or at least we're not talking about the things that we didn't look forward to. And yay!
And speaking of exciting things coming up, next week, guys, we're going to have a very special episode of Popcorn and Prosecco where you can tune in with us on Friday night and watch Winter's Tale with us live Winter's Tale. And as you've heard us talk about, it is a movie that is so bad that it's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you can rent your version, and then we'll watch it with you, and we'll comment, and you can join in with us and enjoy it with us, and we're going to make t-shirts. It's going to be like a whole thing, guys.
I have a chicken!
I sent out the t-shirt designs last night.
They're ridiculous. The bloody face one. Just like,
yeah, we'll send specifics on Twitter and stuff, but basically we're going to be in a Google Hangout, so all you need to join us is a Google ID and to just hang out, I think, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, as long as we're live, you can watch and chat.
Yeah. So, I'm so excited. I haven't really watched it again. I only opened it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
Don't watch it again until...
I'm keeping myself fresh for it. I just needed to go through and screen grab some of the more ridiculous things because t-shirts.
Yeah, that's very important. All right. Well, that's coming up next week, but this is all the time we have for this week. So thank you guys so much for watching. If you want to keep up with us until our whole Winter Tale blowout next week, you can follow us on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We are on Facebook. We are also on iTunes. So go there, comment, like, rate us, all that good stuff. And then, of course, we're on YouTube as well. PopcornProsecco.com. And then all three of us are all over the web. Christy, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I write all over the place. You can find highlights at decadentcriminals.com, but you can follow me on Twitter, where I share highlights and also tweet about all kinds of dumb stuff that's super fun, at Christy Puchko, KristyPuchko.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and you can find my writing at slashfilm.com.
And I am at P. Nemiroff on Twitter, and you can find my writing on Collider.com. Thank you guys so much again for watching, and we can't wait to see you next week. We are so pumped.
Woo!